Brian Buma, the Atlas of Changing Climate.
The genesis for this book wasn't really even on climate change. The genesis for this book was, I just wanted to explain how the world works, you know, at the scale of the world, at the scale you're supposed to, think about it.
Right.
In simple terms, you know, in terms that don't require a science degree to understand, because so often science books are written for scientists, which is sort of preaching to the choir. And it came about really because I noticed, we all noticed that it's hard to understand climate. You know, there's the famous example of Senator Inhofe bringing a, snowball to the floor of the Senate and saying it's cold outside, therefore climate change isn't real. And that is, it's just a misunderstanding, an understandable misunderstanding, I think, but a misunderstanding of just the scale at which the world works. So this book, it's over half imagery and half maps, so it can display the world as a whole, you know, as a piece. And the goal was just to explain how this works, why weather 1,000 miles away really does influence your weather here, why when it's cold on the East Coast or in Michigan, it can be quite warm in Alaska. During some of these cold air outbreaks when I was living, I was living in Alaska, you know, it was cold in the East Coast. It's actually warmer in Alaska than it was in Michigan. So but once you get into explaining like, this is what drives climate. This is how the atmosphere works. This is how land works. You have to talk about climate change because it just comes naturally out of it. So I hope folks will read this book with an open mind, not even trying to be convinced, just trying to understand how the world works, how climate works. And I think the recognition of climate change emerges very naturally from just the simple physics of understanding and seeing this stuff displayed in maps and imagery.
And it should, but you throw politics in there and then all of a sudden it doesn't.
It should, yeah. And this is one of those things that I don't understand why it's politicized. I really don't, because when you just sit down and think, all right, well, this is how the world gets warmer, this is how the world gets colder, that has nothing to do with politics. It's just very, very simple,
right?
Simple science, and it's all displayed in here. I mean, people have known carbon dioxide warms the Earth since the 1800s. Like, it's not a new idea at all. In fact, they had really good estimates of how much the world would warm back in 1896 with the addition of carbon dioxide. So this isn't, it's just not complicated. They could figure it out back then. Now, whether you want to do something about it, that becomes a political decision, I suppose. But the recognition that it's happening, well, that shouldn't be a political thing. You know, I was looking at Michigan. Your precipitation annually is up about 10%, so it should be, it's getting wetter there. Your stormfall precipitation is up 35%, so your storms are way stormier than they used to be. And ice on the Great Lakes is down almost two-thirds since the 70s. Like, these are very observable changes, right? This isn't a political thing. So, the science is actually not that complicated, and I hope the book explains that in a way that doesn't preach, that doesn't condemn, just simply explains and lets people draw their own conclusions.
You have some pretty amazing illustrations in here.
It's absolutely gorgeous. The book is a couple hundred pages, and over half of it is full page maps, full page illustrations. Right now I have it open to a map of tree diversity across the United States. They're just gorgeous imagery. It was such a pleasure to work with folks on this. Most of them are from National Geographic, and then there's a bunch from data visualization specialists and geographers and artists, like straight up artists.
I kind of enjoyed that map of Washington D.C. with the shade trees.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Washington, D.C. is great. So there's also a lot of historical maps in here, because another thing I wanted to communicate in this book was how by looking at things from a higher viewpoint, at a bigger scale, changes our understanding. And D.C. is a great example. There's a map in there of shade trees, of essentially for urban forest biodiversity, because there's a whole section on cities as ecosystems. that Congress did in the late 1800s. Congress in the 1800s was very competitive, as I suppose we still are. And in particular, D.C. wanted to compete with the great cities of Europe. And so they took great pride in cultivating their urban forests. And they made these extraordinarily detailed maps showing what types of trees were planted where. And you can actually use that map today and walk around D.C. and find trees from Civil War era, or find streets that have the same species, at least, from the Civil War era. There's an amazing just wealth of maps in here just to get a different perspective on, how these systems work. It was really fun.
So, Brian, where are we going right or wrong as far as climate, and what can we do about it?
I think where we're going, I'll start with the wrong and end on a positive note. I think where we're going wrong is we're just still thinking about it at the wrong scale. You know, we're thinking about it like, what does climate change mean based on my local experience, or what does climate change mean based on the last couple years, which is a big emphasis here. And that's just the wrong way to think about climate. Stuff takes place over thousands of miles and decades to centuries. So we're already locked into several feet of sea level rise. We've already done that. Like, it's going to happen. It happens slowly, but the book takes some pains to explain how it works. It's going to happen slowly, but it's going to happen. So we've already committed to things because our brains aren't wired to think long term. You know, we're simple, small, relatively speaking, small critters, and we think about local things and we think about short time spans. So we're going wrong, I think, because we're just not thinking about the problem at the right scale. You know, we're just not thinking about it globally because it is a global thing, and it emerges in different places at different rates and in different ways, but it's a global thing. Where we're going right, I think, is especially with the younger generation getting a bit more fired up about what they have to do. Like right now, there's this climate summit going on in the UK.
Right.
And there's a lot of good pledges coming out of there. The United States is on some of them, not on others. But there's a lot of good sort of language being put towards solving some of these problems, or at least heading off some of the worst problems. Again, we're not going to save a lot of Florida because of sea level rise. It's too late for that. But we can slow other damages. But that's going on. But even more encouraging, I think, is the amount of youth motivation and youth energy around this topic. You know, they're not satisfied with just words. There's a lot of folks sort of standing up for real substantive change. And so I think as folks grow up and emerge into higher level leadership roles with these newer generations, I think we'll have a lot of built-in energy there as well. So I think we're doing some things right too.
Any areas of I guess emergency right now that you see?
Yeah, I think that one of the most pressing needs we need to think about at the national level, at the United States level, is water. Is our water balance, particularly in agricultural regions? Excuse me. So, California for food. You know, we worry so much about oil and energy independence and all that sort of jazz, and that's just energy. We can live without it, or reduced amount of it, or even increased cost. But we can't live without water, and we can't live without water where we grow our food. And so the reduction, the droughts and or massive storms in California directly hit our food. And as we continue to change, warm the climate, we continue to shift precipitation patterns for the north. California will dry out. The upper Midwest, where there's also a lot of food production, has seen a little bit more water, 5 to 10% more over the past century. But it tends to come in those big storms that I mentioned earlier, and that messes with planting, that creates more flooding problems. And so the reallocation of water around the world and the increase in storm intensity, especially in agricultural areas, are an emergency, I think. I mean, we need food when we need it. It's not something we can stockpile very easily. And so I think tackling the challenge of climate change from a water perspective is probably one of our biggest national emergencies right now, or should be one of our biggest national priorities right now.
So we're not doing enough about that? would you say?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Yeah. The challenge, of course, is it is essentially a global problem, right? Like, this is a global climate change thing. And so right now folks are arguing to keep global warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius, so about 3 degrees Fahrenheit. That's still a fairly large amount of warming. And it doesn't sound like much. And this is, again, something the book really, the Atlas really tries to do is bridge that gap between our local experience, like, what, 3 degrees Fahrenheit? Like, you know, it changes by 30 every day. Bridge the gap between why daily fluctuations of 3 degrees aren't that big of a deal, but an average global change of 3 degrees is a big deal. And that's a big deal. And we're actually on track for more than that right now. So we are not doing enough to slow the rate of warming. The ship has sailed in terms of stopping these effects, mm-hmm. but we can reduce them. We can keep them, you know, a few degrees less than they would be otherwise. And even fractions of degrees matter for things like long-term sea level rise, precipitation and food production, things like that. So we're not doing enough, but we can do more. And I think it's encouraging that people are trying, that people are organizing, young folks are organizing. There are new technologies coming online. Carbon capture in Iceland, the largest carbon capture facility in Iceland, just came online. There's technology emerging. Like, these are problems that we can solve, but we have to solve them at the scale at which they emerge, which is a global thing.
Well, I like your book because you try to make it a little more simple, a very complex topic with your various charts, maps, infographics, as you like to say.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a fit.
Did you make that up?
Or not. No, I didn't. I didn't actually make up infographics, but I do kind of like it. It sounds fancy anyway. No, that is really... and I'm glad you liked it. Thank you for saying that. That's because that was one of the goals of the book, was not to write this thing for an audience that already has a science degree. You know, I mean, those people don't need to read it. You know, like, they sort of already know how it works, and they can decide how much they care. But they already sort of know how it works because that's what they were trained in. But a lot of people weren't, and not everyone should. You know, I worked in lumber mills. I worked in fish processing plants. Like, we need police officers, and we need folks working in lumber mills, and they don't need a science degree, but they do need to understand this too. And so I tried to write it at that level where it's understandable. It's not meant to be pretentious. It's not meant to have any sort of jargon that's inaccessible. It really is just the basics of how it works. And I hope people find it engaging. It's sprinkled throughout with stories of people or places around the world to keep it grounded. It should be a fun read, you know, that folks can just have on their coffee table, and they can pick it up and look at some beautiful imagery, or they can pick it up and read a few stories, and then they can put it back down again. You know, read about how the Mississippi floods in 27 inspired some blues and eventually emerged as a Led Zeppelin song. You know, there's stories like that in there. Or read about the DC trees in DC.
Yeah.
Like, I hope it's a fun read. You know, I was going for that.
Can folks get on the internet, take a look at it?
They certainly can. Yeah, there are some page views and everything available either at my website, which is brianbuma.com. Just my name, B-U-M-A is the last name. It's a weird mm-hmm. last name. It's a Dutch last name, actually. And you're in Michigan, so lots of Dutch names around.
Yeah.
or you can also view some pages at Amazon.
Brian, we appreciate the visit. Good book.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a great talking to you.
Yeah, take care. Brian Buma, BUMA.com, The Atlas of Changing Climate.